Over the months that followed, he wrestled with his new flesh. Because he had always been a horseman, he treated it as if it were an unbroken colt, bending it to his will by force and persuasion. Since his youth, he had made many more arduous demands upon his body than the one he was making now. He schooled and disciplined himself mercilessly. First, he practiced breathing techniques, which gave him extraordinary stamina and powers of concentration. Then he was ready to master his newly grown parts. Within a short time, he was able, without manual stimulation, to remain fully tumescent from dusk till dawn. He schooled himself until he was able to withhold his seed indefinitely, or to spend it at the precise moment of his choosing. Demeter had described what he had experienced when Eos had had him in her power and their infernal coupling. Taeta knew that he would soon be the victim of her carnal invasion, and if he were to survive, he must learn to resist. All his preparations for the struggle seemed futile. He was matching himself against one of the most voracious predators of the ages. Yet he was a virgin. "I need a woman to help me arm myself," he decided, "preferably one who was vastly experienced." Since their first meeting, he had seen Dr. Lusulu on more than one occasion in the library. Like him, she seemed to spend much of her spare time in study. They had exchanged brief salutations, but although she seemed ready to take their friendship further, he had not encouraged it. Now he looked out for her, and one morning he came across her sitting at a work table in one of the library rooms. "The peace of the goddess be upon you," he greeted her quietly. He had heard Hannah and Ray use the same phrase. Lusulu looked up and smiled warmly. Her aura flared with fiery zigzag lines. Her colour rose and her eyes glowed. When she was aroused, she was a handsome woman. "A peace on you, my lord," she replied. "I am much taken by the new cut of your beard. It suits you most admirably." They spoke for a few minutes, then Taeta took his leave and went to his own table. He did not look in her direction again, until much later, when he heard her roll the scrolls she was studying and stand up. Her sandals slapped lightly on the stone floor as she crossed the room. Now he glanced up and their eyes met. She inclined her head towards the door and smiled again. He followed her out into the forest. She was walking away slowly along the path towards the sanatorium. He caught her up before she had gone another 100 yards. They chatted together, and at last she asked, "I often wonder about your recovery from the procedure that Dr. Hannah performed on you. Has it gone as well as it started off?" "Indeed, yes," he assured her. "Do you recall that you discussed with Dr. Hannah my ability to ejaculate?" He saw her aura light when he used the evocative word, and her voice was slightly hoarse as she replied, "Yes." "Well, I can assure you that it is now happening regularly. As a surgeon and a scientist, you might have some professional interest in a demonstration." They kept up the pretense of being colleagues until they entered his rooms. He took a moment to cover the peephole in the corner with his cloak, then came back to where she stood. "I will need your assistance once again," he said, as he took off his tunic. "Of course," she agreed, and came to him readily. She reached down for him, and after a few deft strokes, she said, "You have grown a great deal since our first meeting." Then a little later she asked, "My lord, may I ask if you have ever known a woman before?" "Alas," he shook his head mournfully, "I would not know how to begin." "Then let me instruct you." Naked, she was even more handsome than when she was clothed. She had wide hips, large resilient breasts, and big dark nipples. When she lay on her back on his sleeping mat, spread her thighs and guided him into her, he was taken off guard by the heat and the clinging oleaginous embrace of her secret flesh. He came perilously close to spending himself before they had begun in earnest. With a huge effort, he regained control of himself and his body. Now he was able to profit from all his practice and self-training. He blocked out his own sensations and concentrated on reading her aura in the way a mariner reads a chart of the oceans. He used it to divine her needs and wants before she became aware of them. He made her cry out and whimper. He made her screech like a condemned woman on a torture table. She spasmed, and her whole body convulsed. She pleaded with him to stop, then begged him never to stop. "You are killing me," she sobbed at last. "In the holy name of the goddess, I can go on no longer." But he went on and on. She was weakening, unable to meet his thrusts. Her face was wet with tears and sweat. Dark shadows of fear fell across her eyes. "You are a devil," she whispered. "You are the devil himself. I am the devil that you, Hannah, and others like you have created." She was ready at last. There was no resistance left in her. He held her down, pinning her deeply. Her body and mind were open to him. He covered her mouth with his, forcing her lips open, then arched his back and, like a pearl diver, taking a long last breath before plunging below the surface, he drew it all out, her strength, her wisdom, and her knowledge, her triumphs and defeats, her fear and her deeply buried guilt. He took everything she had and left her empty on the mat. Her breathing was quick and shallow, her skin pale and translucent as wax. Her eyes stared ahead unblinking, but saw nothing. He sat beside her through the rest of that night, reading her memories, learning her secrets, truly coming to know her. The dawn light was filtering into the room when at last she stirred and rolled her head from side to side. "Who am I?" she whispered weakly. "Where am I? What has happened to me? I can remember nothing." "You are a person named Lusulu, but you have wrought great evil in your life. You were tormented by guilt. I have taken it and all else from you, but there is nothing of yours that I wish to keep. I am giving it back to you, especially the guilt. In the end, it will kill you, and you so richly deserve that death." As he spread her again and knelt over her, she tried to fight him off, but she did not have the strength. As he entered her for the second time, she screamed, but the scream burbled in her throat and did not reach her lips. When he was deep in her, he took another deep breath and strained. He expelled it all back into her in a single long ejaculation. After he'd finished, he uncoupled from her and went to bathe himself. When he came back into the sleeping chamber, she was pulling on her tunic. She gave him one look of stark terror, and he saw that her aura was shredded. She stumbled to the door, pulled it open, and scuttled into the passage. The sound of her running feet receded. He felt the first twinge of pity for her. But he recalled all her heinous crimes, and it fell away. Then he thought, "But she has made retribution in small part by teaching me how I must deal with her mistress, the Great Witch."